All right, friends, we are back with more Heroes of Feeding Tampa Bay. I hope you guys all enjoyed the last episode. I know we did. Like that.
Yeah.
It's always so cool talking to the people you don't get to talk to all the time.
Yeah, I know. And I'm so excited for this next episode. But we want to encourage you, if you didn't listen to the first, you're really missing out, right, Thomas?
Without a doubt. How many years have we done this episode, this series?
I would say, has it been every year that we've done the show? Yes. That's almost 6 years.
Yes.
Yeah,
it'd be really interesting. I would encourage the listener to go back and look through our catalog. Where can they find us, Ev?
Oh, well, yeah. We are on Spotify. We are on YouTube. We are on Apple Music.
And you can go back and look at the catalog of...
the hundreds of episodes.
Yeah. But also, specifically, go back and... Some of our colleagues have done this in the past, and it's been nice to listen to their story and their journey. I think, you know, we know this, but we hope the listener knows this too. The folks that we get to work with are some exceptional people. We've certainly heard that so far, and we're about to hear more of it again.
Yeah.
So enjoy. So, guys, we've, of course, got another one of our peers coming in, our friends, part of our family. But here at Feeding Tampa Bay, we have this massive new facility that is impacting this community just in incredible ways. But the first, we have to start with our clean and safe.
That's right.
Right? Thomas, really quickly, you want to tell about what clean and safe means, and then we'll introduce our guest.
Well, I think what clean and safe is supposed to mean to us is the way in which we look after our the neighbors we serve, the colleagues we serve with, the partners who help us. It's a commitment to doing things the right way that makes sure that everything we do comes back to the ideas, our facility, and the way in which we go about our business clean, and is everybody that does the work that we do safe.
So that's that. And also, you know, you have to think about this was built by the community. So it's also being incredible stewards of that investment that people have given. And there's one person on our team that no matter who we bring in this door, we can be really proud of what we have here.
Yeah.
So welcome to the podcast, James.
James. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I see. Are you putting your phone on mute there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, phone ringing during the podcast. Never the best. Yeah, thank you for
He's
that.
He's always on duty. Yeah. This is a big place, like Shannon
said. Yeah, I wish. Right? Apple used to have that button. You could just turn it on and off. Yeah. Now you have to go change the setting.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And most often I do that, and then my phone doesn't ring, and I miss all the...
Right.
Just admitting it there. Right. So, James, we have a question for you. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
A hot dog is like a unique thing all by itself.
I
wouldn't consider it a sandwich, but it's like a hot dog is by itself. A hot dog is just different.
Yeah, it stands alone.
You know, you don't go to a baseball game and order a sandwich. You go and order a hot dog.
True.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's your criteria, is that you go to a baseball game and order a sandwich.
Well, that's one of them. I was thinking about that. Hot dogs. Where are hot dogs famous? And that's...
Put on a hot dog? Do you eat hot dogs?
Yes, sir.
And what do you put on your hot dog?
Usually mustard and onions.
Okay.
Onions. Mustard and onions. Very spicy.
I think it's the first onion.
Thank God it's no ketchup.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he has
I mean,
thing.
I probably have done ketchup just because I was starving, didn't have nothing else.
But, that's so funny.
Yeah, but mustard and
Have you wrapped the hot dog in bread at home?
Yeah, I've done that before too.
Right? When you're rushing and you're hungry and you just grab a piece of bread. And...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, if you don't have hot dog buns.
Right. Yeah, but a hot dog is not nearly as good on a piece of bread as it is on a bun.
That's true.
Oh, no. Yeah. Soft or toasted?
Well, there's got to be the right ratio of meat to bread. So when that gets out of whack, then the entire situation's not really as good as it could be.
How about you just tear that extra bread?
No, so the bread, the piece of bread is too thin.
And you feed it to the chickens.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's a
The piece of bread is too thin. The hot dog.
Right, yeah, it's not, it's not the same.
It'll work in a pinch, but it's not a good idea.
So I really like this answer because it's one of those, it's another answer because it's what you order when you ask for it.
That's
but some people think it's a sandwich. Anyway,
right.
So we have a lot of people who think differently.
Well, not everybody's, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting, right?
Astute.
That was very well put, yeah.
Well, welcome the astute James.
Right. So, James, why Feeding Tampa Bay? Tell us. How'd you come to work for us?
Well, as you guys know my background, when I was looking for a job, and a guy was telling me that there was an opening here at Feeding Tampa Bay. And my heart was just in a place to where I wanted to work somewhere where I could not just make a difference, but a place that was making a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I heard there was an opening here at Feeding Tampa Bay, I was really excited about it. And I was originally applied for the a warehouse associate.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there was an opening on the facilities team. Mm-hmm. And the talent acquisition person at the time asked me during our interview if I would want to rather take that job because it paid more and it was like I didn't have to go through the 90-day probation or whatever, I would just be hired immediately. And I just thought it was a perfect fit because of the type of mentality that I had. It was just a perfect fit, and I've been loving it ever since.
There you go.
Your lift is a pretty big one. As Shannon was saying, this is a huge facility.
Yeah, it is.
You started in the old one, so you know the difference between there and here.
Yeah.
What do you find yourself challenged by today that you are not challenged by in the old facility?
Well, here everything's so new, so as soon as you get a blemish, you see it.
True.
There, I was going to say, is it easier?
Oh, no, because you get blemishes.
Yeah.
They're apparent immediately. Mm. Over there, you get a blemish, and it was like nobody saw it.
Right, blended in.
You could hide it.
Yeah, it was a blemished place.
Yeah. I see.
Well, for the listener, it also didn't matter that much because the whole place was a blemish.
Yeah, so
that's a kind word you're using,
right,
a blemish.
Right.
We didn't actually share your title. What is your title?
Mm-hmm. I'm the facility services supervisor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what did you start? What was your starting? Because you've kind of moved up.
Yeah, I was a facility coordinator.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And now you have a little team behind you.
Right.
How are they doing? And what's it like to have your folks? You got some terrific folks on your team.
Well,
we
got a really good team. It's a challenge because we got new people and, you know, it's like you said, it's a big facility.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has their responsibilities, but we're also a team. Mm-hmm. So we have to do events and different stuff. So we're constantly flexing, doing different things.
Right.
So it's everybody's job is an all-day, full-time, bell-to-bell job.
Yeah.
But they're also pulled from that.
Right.
So it's a challenge to them. You know, mm-hmm. when they get pulled from that, then you have to figure out how tomorrow to make up what you didn't do today, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a challenge. But we got a really good team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite part of your role here?
I think my favorite part is just that I'm part of something that's vastly bigger than me and that's making a huge difference in society. And mm-hmm. when I leave every day, it's just like I'm satisfied that I've done something to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's you know, the challenges that I get here, because I've been challenged, you know, doing this team. And you know, I've been in leadership roles before for a long time, but with just one particular group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, I have all this different challenges of different you know, genders, mm-hmm. religions, all these things come into play mm-hmm. when before mm-hmm. it was just, okay, we just had convicts,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And it was just, okay, do you have the heart for the job? And then, you know, everybody already knew everybody, you know, so you knew what type of person they were.
Right.
So here you got to figure out who this person is, what kind of way you have to communicate with them, mm-hmm. because everybody has to be communicated differently.
Yes.
And it's been a challenge. Yeah. It's been a real challenge, but it's been fun. I love it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think all of us would observe about you is that you have an incredibly, and importantly, a high standard of excellence.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, I think, something we all remark upon is that that's something that seems to drive you. How does that get developed in you? Where does that come from? This sense of we need to do this, we need to do it right, and we're not going to rest until it's done that way.
I think the situation that I came from, you know, when I was in some people would say a hopeless situation. I was in a position where I thought it would never change. I thought my situation was going to be like that from now on.
Mm.
So when changes started being made inside of me, and, you know, intellectually and emotionally and spiritually, I knew that my situation wouldn't change, so I needed just to change my situation.
Mm.
I knew I was going to be there forever. I knew I was never going to get out of prison. In my mind, it wasn't like I had a hope of one day of getting out. I just knew in my heart I would never get out. So I said, you know, to myself, I need to make a world a better place here. You know what I mean? So I started doing it there. I took a toothbrush and started cleaning stairs and, you know, was getting mocked and all that kind of stuff because I was cleaning the place up and it was their place, you know.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make the world a better place where I was. And I knew I could only affect my immediate surroundings. So that's what I did. And it just became habit. It just habitualized it. And then I realized, you know, why do something if you're going to be mediocre?
Mm.
I'm not here to be mediocre. You know, right. I mean, that's not something, I feel like it's a waste of time. If you're going to do something, do it right. You know, do it the best you can, make a difference. And plus, when you have a facility like this, people gave this to us.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they gave this to us. And it was like, okay, James, they gave this to us. Take care of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's very important to me. I mean, yeah. I wake up every morning. Sometimes I don't go to sleep at night thinking about stuff that needs to be done. I'm thinking right now about what needs to be done right now.
Right.
Because there's a mess out there that hasn't been addressed and has to be addressed. So
you're so good at what you do.
Truly, yeah.
I think there's two things that you mentioned that I'd love to hear more about your philosophy on. The first is, how did you find hope and hopelessness? Mm. How did you find a way to say, I'm going to be a person that's positive, I'm going to find a sense of hope out there? And as you described, your circumstances suggested that none of that was going to be possible, but somehow you found that within you. How did you find that?
Mm. Well, of course, my relationship with God. You know, I got my spiritual awakening while I was in, and one day I was reading the Bible about this king that had died, and all the people went to the river, and they were making this great lamentation for him. And just inside of me, some people, you know, I call it the Holy Spirit, was speaking inside of me, saying, who's going to cry for you?
Mm.
And at that time, I had no contact with my family for 13, 14 years. And, you know, if I was really honest with myself, the only person that would have cried for me then would have been my mom.
Mm.
And she wouldn't have cried because I was gone. She would have been crying from relief, you know, because it was a nightmare. I was a nightmare person. And it was just one bad thing of destruction after another.
Mm.
So when I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, man, I'm leaving this world. And when I leave the world, everybody's going to be glad that I'm gone.
Mm.
They're not going to be glad or sad because I was here and I made an impact in their life for a positive way. So I just determined in my heart right then, man, when I die, people are going to cry for me.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just decided there were some changes I needed to make. And I've done a lot of, you know, I did a lot of introspection. I did a lot of stuff with the criminal mentality studies. And, you know, I've had a lot of experience in that, dealing with people with that. And, you know, when I first started my studies, I started seeing what was wrong with everybody else.
Mm.
And then, well, first I started doing the studies just because it was something I needed to do for certificates or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then as I continued doing, I started seeing what was wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And then I eventually started saying, hey, man, something's wrong with you, man. You need to get some stuff right, you know.
Right.
And I think if I would have had a hope to get out of prison with the mentality that I was, I think the changes that I would have made would have been made geared to getting out. And, you know, when I go back to the prisons and talk to the guys, I tell them, listen, if your goal for change is to get out of prison, you're setting your sights too low because one day you're going to get out. Then what's going to motivate you? What's going to motivate you then? If you don't have something that's going to keep you motivated regardless of what happens, then you're going to fall.
Mm.
You know, guys do. They do make changes and they do all the stuff to get out and then they get out.
Man.
So you're now out for some period of time?
3 years. A little bit over 3 years.
Yeah. So the other thing that I observe about you is that, and we have other folks that have been in your situation that work for us and have worked for us. One of the things that I notice in you, I think we all notice in you, is your sense of gratitude for the circumstances that you're in and the opportunities that you have. Again, tell us a little bit more about how that was developed. I think in some ways you've answered the question, some of the things that you've said, but I think it's important that we hear from you. How have you maintained that sense of gratitude? How do you maintain that sense of perspective today that, you know, 3 years later, right? It's still as strong as it was as the day you walked out.
Well, actually, it was developed before I walked out.
Right.
But, you know, when you're going through life, sometimes when you wake up, everything's not going to go okay.
Yeah.
So you have to say, you know, is everything good? Okay, is there anything good? Is there one thing good?
Right.
And then if you find that one thing good, you grab onto that and then just be grateful for it.
Mm.
I mean, I have a lot more. And when people say, why are you so grateful? I mean, it's easy for me to say, I have way more reason to be grateful than just about anybody on the planet.
Mm, yeah.
I've been given a tremendous gift. You know what I mean? And, you know, I've been asked to, you know, I forget how the saying goes, but I'm not going to neglect my shot. You know what I mean? I've been given an opportunity. God's had grace on me. Feeding Tampa Bay's had grace on me. You know, the red carpet really has been poured out for me. And the only person that could ever really mess it up is me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm just grateful for the new lease that I have on life. I was sitting in my newly created office that I made in my house, and I'm sitting in there, and I'm sitting in a chair that used to be my dad's. My dad passed away in 2008. And I'm sitting in this chair, and I'm just looking around, and I'm saying, God, look what you've done. Hmm. Look what you've done. I've been out 3 years. Yeah. 3 years, and I'm in a place now where people aren't in their whole life.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't got to this place in their whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, last year I gave a car to my granddaughter. Mm. You know what I mean? I was the best grandpa in the world for one day.
I love that for you. So I want to touch on this because I know how hard you've worked outside of Feeding Tampa Bay. And how grateful you are for that. You mentioned about you weren't connected with family for such a long time, but now you've been with us for 3 years, and you're redoing a home. You talked about sitting in your new office. You've connected with your family. You've had your mom come and meet all of us.
She's beside herself.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, you know, when I was a child, I had a very tumultuous childhood. You know, I was all the time in trouble. And, you know, everybody would tell me, all the counselors, you're so bright. You could do whatever you want. My mentality was, that's what you tell everybody. Mm. You tell every kid that comes in here that. And I didn't realize it until I went to prison and started realizing, hey, man, you do got a little bit up there. You know what I mean?
Astute.
Maybe we could utilize it. So I got a bachelor's degree since I was in. And, you know, I did a lot of studies. You know, I read Greek now. You know, I read a chapter of Greek in the New Testament every morning. And it's just stuff that I'd utilize my time. Really just because I didn't want to waste time, but not really just to better myself. It was kind of like a byproduct. Mm. That before I went to prison, I read one book in its entirety. And I mean, I've read thousands of books.
That's right. Wild. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, Shannon was mentioning this, but I want to share kind of a full circle moment for you. So as some folks are aware, we have Food Banker of the Year, which is a recognition we do every year, and two or three folks are recognized for their service to the mission, not their production or, right, it's your heart for and service to the mission. And so you were nominated by many folks and won one of our yearly recognition awards, which we were awfully proud of, and you should know how many folks thought that was a great idea, your peer group, right? Mm-hmm. And so I get an email from Rhonda, our COO, one day saying, hey, we have an unusual request. So we have a dinner with our board, and the winners of the award come to the board dinner and just get to, you know, meet our board, and the board, more importantly, the board gets to meet them. Mm. And the request that I got from Rhonda is James would like his mother to come to the dinner. Is that allowed? And so I called our board chair and say, hey, Mark, what do you think about this? And he goes, well, I think it's fantastic. So you and mom, along with the other recipients of the award that year, came and had dinner with us and the board, which was lovely. Your mother was, you could see, beaming. And I think, as you mentioned a moment ago, the challenge she had with her son, it was a full circle moment for her.
Yeah.
But what did it mean to you?
Well, I think my mom knew that something had changed in me when I was in. When they started coming to see me again, they knew something was different. Mm. But there was always that thing in the back of her mind, you know what I mean? What's going to happen when he gets out and the restraints are taken off? There's nobody watching him all the time. What's going to happen, you know? Mm. And I think that when she saw, you know, the goals that I had set, that I told her that I set, you know, the first year, I'm going to save money, I'm going to get a car, I'm going to pay cash for it. Second year, you know, I'm going to start saving money before down. You know, she started seeing me set the goals, meet the goals, and that people were recognizing me for the things that I was doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that year I won the Ron Padgett Courage Award, which I thought was insane because, you know, there's the people I work with. When I look around, I see the people that I work with, it's like I feel the least. Not the least as important-wise, but just – there's so many heroes here, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you walk through the neighborhood and they're just, these people are just pouring their hearts out.
Really?
Yeah.
It's incredible. So to me, I look forward to coming here because I don't look at facilities as a facilities team. I look at facilities as every team.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we're part of every team. So what we do is we just assist everywhere we can because they need help. You know what I mean? And they're doing a tremendous job and we're helping them do that job. So really, we have a hand in all that. So... now's a good time to ask for a raise.
Yeah, right. Speaking of.
Right.
Now we're on the subject. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
James, I want to thank you for coming by. I don't know about you guys, but we have so many. You're right. We have a lot of heroes.
We do.
Mm-hmm. And but we also have a lot of great teammates who help teach us lessons on what second chances are, what they mean, and that we should give everyone the opportunity to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm really proud to work here because of some of that. That's an addition to everything else. But we have amazing people here, and you're one of them.
Yeah, you're definitely one of our heroes, my friend.
Thank thank you.
Appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. During the holidays, everyone deserves to make lasting memories around the table with their loved ones. But many in our community struggle to provide holiday meals. That's where you come in. You can play a pivotal role in spreading cheer and supporting the health of schoolchildren, families, and seniors across the 10 counties we serve in West Central Florida. All you have to do is visit feedingtampabay.org/feedtheseason to donate to our Feed the Season campaign that runs every year. Together, we can make holiday meals possible.
You guys, another amazing colleague, one that's really quite new to our team, and what she does is really new, and it's very exciting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen, welcome to Stick a Fork in It.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have a last name, Kristen?
Kristen Burke.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a few Kristens now, so
yes, clear. You are now known by your last name only.
Yeah,
it's all right.
So welcome, Burke.
Yeah. Welcome, Burke.
Burke in the house.
We'll take it.
Right.
Burke in the house. So, what do you think? Is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
No.
It's not. It's a meal, I would say.
Wow.
I haven't heard that before. Okay.
It's a meal. It's
all right,
hot.
But now it is meat and bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is and a condiments. Ham sandwich?
It's a sandwich. I think because it's hot, I would consider it.
What about a Jimmy John sub?
Yeah, or a hot ham sandwich.
Wait, a hot ham sandwich?
You haven't had like a grilled?
No, God, no. I have had a bologna sandwich.
Fried bologna.
Fried bologna sandwich for every kid that grew up in the Northeast.
The island.
White Wonder bread.
And yes,
mayonnaise. I know you love mayonnaise.
God, mayonnaise. No, I don't do mayonnaise.
And then fried bologna.
That's why we love each other.
Yeah. So you're in with it is not a sandwich.
Not a sandwich. Okay. No, it feels like I could serve a hot dog as a meal versus sandwiches.
That's
like
your criteria.
A lunch.
Huh. Yeah. It's a good. Huh. Yeah, it's good
that's
to have
my criteria.
Good to have standards.
I'm not a hot dog person either way. So there you go. Okay. I haven't thought that much.
Do you put
about
mustard
it.
Or ketchup on a hot dog?
I don't eat hot dogs.
She doesn't put anything on it.
I've worked in baseball and I still don't eat hot dogs.
Is that allowed? So it's just are you allowed to
baseball.
Work in baseball?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You worked in baseball.
It did.
Come on, tell us about it.
I did. So I went to school in sports management in New Jersey, so I worked for the Yankees part-time for about 6 years, and then moved to Florida and worked for the Rays for about 8 years.
Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. What'd you do there?
Sales.
Sales.
Sales. Tried and true. Sales.
So how did you, as a kid in New Jersey, how did you decide sports management? Or is it sports management really what you do to
it
become
is.
A gym teacher?
No. No, actually, it was in the business school. I went to Seton Hall. It was in their business school. So I've got that background. But I always joke I'm the least athletic person to ever work in sports. So I have no great athletic stories growing up as a child.
Mm.
I'm just a big teamwork person. I love the dynamic of a team. I love watching it. Cheering people on, seeing, you know, all the life lessons that come with being on a team. So it just stuck to it.
So loving all of that, but was there an influence or did something happen that led you to that? Or that's just organically, that's who you've been?
Just organically. I mean, I guess when you grow up watching the Yankees, you know, it's you're inherently a sports person. We grew up watching sports and just something kind of clicked in high school that said, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
For a career, so.
How is sports management different than sales, or is that really the track you go into to get into sales, or is sales the way you have to start in the sports world to make your
I
way?
I think almost everything starts at sales, particularly in sports. So that's the door, the foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever sought out to be a salesperson, but that is how you get in. But for me, it was it's fun to sell. Although when I started with the Rays, they were at the bottom, but then I got to be part of the at the top.
Yeah, so
it all made sense after a while.
All because of you.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah. It's true.
You just say you're welcome to
me. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So how did food banking come into play?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of combination of things. So I spent my time in sports, took some time off to have kids, And then once we knew that, that portion of life was, chapter had ended there. It was time to.
You still have the kids, right?
I do still have
the kids. Okay, for the listener.
On most
right. Kids are still with
she
us.
She didn't get rid of them.
Nothing bad happened.
I got rid of them. Yeah. No, I still have the kids, but it was time to get back to work. Mm-hmm. And it gave me a real nice opportunity to understand, like, what does the forever of my career look like, which is how I got into nonprofit. Mm. So I did that with the American Red Cross for 10 years, but then really just kind of been watching from afar, you know, or
on
pretty
the news.
Or pretty close by, lots of news coverage, and just inspired by the work that was being done.
I appreciate the compliment. Thank you. But that's not really why we're here. So how does one transition from sales, and mm-hmm. you did more than sales at the Raise, so you graduated up through your career, but how does one say, I think nonprofit speaks to me? Mm-hmm. At that point, you know, having raised your children, the ones you kept.
The ones I did keep them,
The ones you still have today. Having raised your children, you at some point made a decision to say, this is interesting to me.
Yeah. I think to me, a lot of it is relationship driven, you know, so kind of the essential tools that it would take to be a good salesperson is also, I think, to me, what it would take to work well in nonprofit as far as that relationship building, the understanding of who you're working with, and, you know, both kind of internally and externally. And, you know, it's probably cliche to say, but just that putting your powers to good. You know, I knew I did not want to get back into sports. It's, you know, quite a heavy lift, although so is nonprofit, as I have learned. I don't know if that was a good swap, but
that's what you think when you come in.
That's what you think, but
not so much.
But I was never, I mean, selling baseball is fun, right? Like, it's a totally different thing. So I was never interested in, like, just a hardcore sales job. I think the ability to make the personal connections, to interact with people, and then to really, you know, see kind of the good work that it's doing was the initial interest. And then as time kind of progressed, it was like, oh, this really is making a difference. And, you know, you're giving people the opportunity to participate in what we do. So it's fun to be able to connect those dots.
So sales, but tell us, the listener, about your role here.
Sure.
It's kind of a unique.
Mm-hmm. It is a bit unique.
Yeah.
So I'm in.
Unique as in we're still trying to figure it out.
Yes, we are still trying to figure it out.
But it's going well. Just
well, you know, I think
all is good.
For the listener, one of the things that we feel really good about at Feeding Tampa Bay is that we like to say this, we're always in the talent acquisition business. Yeah. And you and I had a chance to meet.
Yep.
We got to know each other. We liked each other a lot. We just didn't have quite the right role, but we kept in touch.
Yes.
And kept talking. Here you sit, doing what exactly, as Shannon asked.
So my title is business development. I think what that looks like is a few different things, but the way I kind of capture it, and I think Thomas and I have captured it, is what does the future state of our organization look like? To know that, you know, so much of what we do does rely on philanthropy, but how do we grow as an organization financially so that we can grow from a mission development standpoint? So looking for any and all opportunities that really start to bring business into us in a different sort of way.
So explain those a little bit, because I think a few I'm really proud of, and I think are fascinating that we do, that you lead.
Yeah, absolutely. So some are, you know, kind of a little bit easier to understand. You know, if you've spent any time with us in the last year, you've probably been to an event in our event space. We do rent our loft space, so it's a traditional office space. We started some partnerships in our warehouse space. Mm-hmm. So some of those kind of look and feel maybe a little bit more traditional. And then I think where it's kind of most exciting and most opportunistic is really the opportunity to put our kitchen to good work in a variety of ways as far as meals go. So, you know, if people, you know, have meal needs in their community as part of their organization, to be able to be that known provider for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the part that's interesting for us as an organization is that for the listener, we all know in our field, and Brian Green talked about this when he was here from Houston Food Bank, philanthropy will not solve the problems we're trying to solve. Right. And so the question for organizations like ours, how do you develop a different approach to revenue?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things about your background, aside from Jim, gym teaching, is that you have a well-developed business background, right? You know how to develop new businesses, new revenue streams. And I think probably that some of the challenge you've had here is we don't know how to do that. You're trying to help
we're
us
learning
figure,
together.
Right. You're trying to help us figure that out.
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's kind of what that niche looks like. Some of it's really a lot of education kind of internally and externally of why we're doing what we're doing. You know, how does that look? At the end of the day, we are still a nonprofit. So to me, I think the best opportunity is, yes, what I'm doing is going to be revenue generating, but it still does all go back into the mission and making us expanding our ability to really grow that. So it's, to me, it's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, right.
Right. And then one of those, you know, just to paint the picture a little bit, when we talk about utilizing our kitchen, is our after school meals instead of contracting those out. Our team is making them themselves. So when we say we're providing a healthy meal, we know that in our heart. We're doing it in our own kitchen, right? Not that before it wasn't, but we're controlling that environment. And then summer meals, you know, how many meals did we put out during last year's storms?
Thousands. I don't recall
thousands
the number offhand.
Like tens of thousands.
Yeah, and so,
So we have the capability to expand that. You know, I think about maybe nursing homes that don't have a proper facility that we could provide healthy meals and safely and frozen very quickly. Mm-hmm. We have a flash freezer. So there's so many elements to that that I just think are really... Yeah. Interesting and beneficial to the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to go back to something that you brought up a moment ago that's intriguing and interesting to me. So you mentioned that one of the reasons why sports management was interesting to you was this idea of being on a team.
Yeah.
What about that resonates with you? Why is that fundamental or foundational? And that's obviously something you thought about a long time ago before you came here. So two-part question. Sure. One is, what about that is important to you? And number two is, what's that experience been like here at Feeding Tampa Bay?
I think to me, there's just something to be said for a common goal, right? Whether it's, you know, winning the game or working on a work project. I just something about it just has always kind of resonated with me. My kids, who I have kept, are both in athletics. And, you know, I do all my little mom moments. I'm like, you know, one day the way that you're interacting with your team now is going to be the way that you interact, you know, with your boss or with your colleagues. And, you know, I just think that there's so much kind of fundamental about being able to work together, you know, for a common cause, for... And it's exciting, right? Like, you know, everyone wants to get behind something, win or lose, preferably winning. But but I think it's, you know, it's that being a part of something that people, you know, to me, it feels human nature, maybe not for everybody.
Right. But, win or learn.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I like win or learn.
There you go. There you go. And I think for here, it's absolutely translated. There's nothing, it seems like nothing we can do without each other. And particularly, I think, in my role where... There's like a little bit of here, a little bit of there, and it all needs to work together has kind of emphasized the importance of that even more.
Yeah, when we work well, it's a symphony. When we don't work so well, it's less so.
Win or learn, right?
Do you think the kids should get trophies no matter what?
No. No, I am competitive. But the competitive side is the part of the teamwork too. So.
Yeah. Right? Wanting to win more than learning.
Yeah.
Right. For the most part.
So if there was, do you have an idea, or if there was an idea that you could help lift our work, what is it? Do you have something that you think about that, man, this would be great if we could do this?
Sure. I go back to the teamwork side of it. I think fundamentally, like Thomas said, you know, when you get it right, it feels great. And when you get it off, then, you know, it's that learning opportunity. I think as we have more kind of new ideas, things that maybe look and feel a little bit different, our ability to work together on those things, I think, is what elevates it. I mean, for the most part, you know, the expertise is there, the understanding, the drive, the motivation. But, you know, sometimes it's easy to stay in your own lane, do your own thing. But I think our ability to kind of cross over and figure each other out would be a big lift.
Yeah.
Be a big lift.
So, again, coming back to you. So... I'm aware that in our discussions, as we're getting to know each other and having coffee together over a course of maybe close to a year, One of the things that I was asking you was, were you willing to make a complete shift in your career mid-career? Right, you were very successful at the Red Cross. Thank you. Right, you led their fundraising efforts. Yeah. Right, very successfully. You had a good career with the Rays. We're assuming you did a good job as a mom, but that seems somewhat in question based on the show. What has it been like for you to shift the focus of your career coming in here? It was, from my perspective, it was a bit of a leap of faith and certainly a change in how you're approaching what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's been harder than I would have anticipated. I think, you know, in some ways you like to tell yourself, like, yeah, I can get out and just do anything any day. You know, but there's some realities of kind of that ego check, so to speak. I'm used to knowing a lot about a lot of things. This year has been learning a lot about a lot of things. So some of it's just a little bit of humility, which is never a bad thing. But so it's been, yeah, it's had its challenges, I think, just kind of, you know, understanding a different world and new team members and things along those lines. We did an exercise early on and I'm like, I'm used to being the go-to person. Like, you can come to me and I'll have all the answers. Now, like, maybe not so much, but we're working on it.
Now you're more than you did before, you learn new things, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I get really happy when I know the answer away.
Going back to the competitive nature.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I want to win the answer.
That makes sense.
So we need you on our trivia team.
Yes, exactly.
We want you. What is it you... You know, again, having made a significant career shift, and as we talked about a moment ago, we're looking to transform the way in which nonprofit organizations ultimately, we think it's necessary we transform the way in which we both serve the neighbors we serve, but also the business model, that we've built in order to do that. What do you think, kind of going back to Shannon's question a bit differently, what do you think we have to do as an organization to adapt and adjust? What does that look like ahead of us? Mm-hmm. And I know it's a hard answer because we're kind of trying to define what it is as we go along.
It is. Yeah.
Our work has always been about like trying to change a car on a tire on a moving car, right? It's always been a little bit challenging. But how do you think about that? How do you think about transformative and different?
Yeah. Well, since no one believes that we should slow down just a minute,
that's a different podcast.
Exactly. I think it's just, you know, really kind of owning who we are. You know, kind of the stories I've heard, so to speak, around kind of being scrappy and just let's go all in on every piece of it. You know, being confident in who we are as an organization and our role in that. And I think we are obviously confident in a lot of ways, but as we grow, knowing like, hey, we got this. And we have a lot of people on our team that know and understand what we need to do presently, know and understand what we need to do in the future, and, you know, kind of set our own course versus maybe following others. Mm-hmm. Goes a long way.
Growing into our own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Burke.
You're the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks we love having us. You here.
Yeah. One of the heroes of FTB.
That's absolutely right. Guys, up next is, to me, just a tall, very meaningful, quiet force to obviously be reckoned with because he helps run Fresh Force. It's our teammate who is amazing, Zachariah.
Thank you.
Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Very
grateful.
Welcome.
Yes.
So, Zachariah, what exactly is your role here at FTB?
Yeah. So, I am the student service manager in Fresh Force.
So you're one-on-one with all of the students that come through here?
Yes, every student passes through me. We meet 2 to 3 times throughout the cohort. You know, I check in on their goals, their progress, make sure they're getting the material, understanding it. If they have any issues, I'm usually the first person to contact.
So you're like the guidance counselor.
Yeah that's kind of what
I'm familiar with the guidance counselor.
I was going to say something different. You've got their back.
Yes, I've got their back.
You've got their back.
I still think it's guidance counselor.
Let's
is the pinnacle of your career?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Yes, you have made it now?
Yes.
It's not the people that you graduate into.
Right, exactly.
It's thank you. Thank you for that.
I got my resume primed, ready to type this up right after this.
Oh, see, there you go. And then you'll have a link.
Yes, right.
Audio and visual.
They can see it. Ooh, yep, they know.
Right.
But what's really important to start with Is a hot dog a sandwich?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think if there's bread in the equation, the answer is a sandwich.
Interesting.
I don't think you can go around it.
Haven't heard that one yet. Yeah. Okay.
If bread is in there,
yeah,
it's a sandwich.
Sausage biscuit from the McDonald's.
Yeah.
Where's that fall?
That's a sandwich.
That's a sandwich.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Biscuit, yeast, sandwich. Yeah.
I'd question, like, because, like, I'm thinking, like, if it's bread involved, like, is French toast the sandwich?
If something's in between it, yes.
Okay.
That's right, because you can, like, stuff French toast.
Yeah, yeah. If you just got plain French toast, that's just French toast.
That's
just dessert, you know?
If you're in Chicago and you want to go get a hot dog, do you say, let's get a hot dog or let's go get a sandwich?
I'll say get a hot dog, but if it comes up and somebody's like, if they ask that question, I say, you know, if we're getting technical, it's a sandwich.
Right. So it's a type of sandwich.
I'm not a hot dog person.
Oh.
I do enjoy sausage, but hot dog is just a little, it's just too much going on.
Yeah.
You're one hand hot dog, two hand cheeseburger. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, it's a little more.
So when you're talking about a sausage, you're not talking about a sausage dog.
Oh, right, like a kielbasa kind of thing?
Where I worked in Manhattan on the corner, I could see from my office down, I don't know, whatever, 20 floors, I could see the same person every day, and she had her cart. She would wheel it from about 25 blocks away. That's how far they would wheel those things before they got in their position. Everybody had their own corner.
Oh, my God.
But she had grilled sausage dogs.
Okay.
And man, were those tasty. Yeah. Now, is bread involved again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's another sandwich.
Yeah.
Did they have like onions and peppers?
You could do
that?
All of that. I would just do on those. No, so on a sausage dog, a hot dog, it's mustard and relish. On a sausage dog, it's just mustard.
That's so interesting.
He has really strict rules about this. Just so you know,
I don't got you.
We can't even get Thomas into cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother level.
We've discussed it before.
It's
unfortunate. Cheeseburger is my favorite food.
Hamburger is my favorite food.
I understand that. It's just.
I was at a restaurant yesterday, and I had to order my. Can I have a cheeseburger without the cheese? Because they don't have a hamburger on the menu. They only have a cheeseburger on the menu, which I do not understand.
Discriminatory. Yeah.
You add cheese to a hamburger. You don't subtract cheese from a hamburger. It should be listed as a hamburger and cheese as an option.
Cheese as an option. Yeah,
you probably sell more listings.
So, Zachariah, favorite cheeseburger?
Favorite cheeseburger. Oh, gosh. I love there's a place in Winter Haven called Adler's. Served a strawberry goat cheese jam burger.
What?
Best thing I've ever tasted.
Wow.
Goat cheese, strawberry jam. It was ridiculous.
That sounds
yummy.
It's complex,
and there's a whole lot of flavors going on in there.
A whole lot of flavors.
Now, do you put any other accoutrement, any other condiments on that?
I didn't touch
it.
The way they gave it to me is how I ate it.
Wow, that's
best burger I've ever had.
Oh, no, we need to write that down. That sounds really delicious. Or you need to take us out there and we can go have it.
I assume you had more than one napkin.
Yes. Oh, plenty of napkins. Yes. Plenty.
Sounds like a multi-napkin burger.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Which are the best.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So, Zachariah, how long have you been with FTB?
I have been, it's easy for me because I started in January, so coming on, 10 months.
Wow. Okay.
Almost 11, yeah.
And how did you choose Feeding Tampa Bay?
That's great. I'd been involved in kind of social work, case management realm, so I was, you know, aware of you guys from a non-profit standpoint, you know, directing people towards here for food or services. And so I knew about you guys. And I guess anybody who works in the nonprofit sector is always looking for an organization that has the support and resources to make sure that they are helping people and helping the people who are helping people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, from the stories I'd heard and from what I just saw, I could assume that was happening. And so I kind of just was always looking for positions that were kind of related to my wheelhouse. And once this popped up, you know, was able to interview with Lem. And you could see from what was going on in operations and just talking with Lemuel about the position and what Feeding Tampa was about, that assumption was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a really cool moment where I was like, oh my gosh, this I think fills in both those bubbles of they are helping people and they're taking care of the people that are working there. Mm-hmm. And in this past 9 months, it's been very clear that it was true. So,
yeah. And there's so much potential in your position too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how are you, we happen to know who your brother So what influenced you to get into the nonprofit world?
That's a good question. I would say, I think my mother and father are probably the greatest influences when it comes to like what I wanted to do. I always saw them give with empty hands, you know, whether it was to, you know, me and my siblings or neighborhood or their coworkers. Like, they were always in positions where they always put themselves in positions to help people,
right?
Even if they didn't have the resources to do so, they'd make it happen. And mm-hmm. so, and I saw the joy that came from doing that. And so yeah. it wasn't like a doing it out of necessity or doing it because they had to. It was doing it because they wanted to, and yeah. because it gave so much life to them. And so, you know, I was like, you know, I want to be able to do that not only in my personal life, but, you know, try and do that work if I can, because
right.
then it's a full circle. You know, you don't have to, you know, find different ways to do it, get creative. It's just something that you do for work.
Right.
And so that kind of led me to wanting to be in case management, social work, and then, you know, figuring out what that looked like. And just kind of just be more focused about it. And so that's what landed me here.
Did your parents, was your parents' service a vocation or an avocation? Did they do it as above and beyond their jobs, or was it part of their jobs?
No, so yeah, it wasn't a part of the jobs, which okay. I think is what was so kind of profound to me. Is like my mother, she worked from the bottom up, no degree. She got to her position just through her hard work. Mm-hmm. And she never preached the message of like it was because of because of herself, her hard work. It was because she just was always willing to do the job mm-hmm. that somebody else wasn't able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't out of like trying to better herself, her situation, or to, you know, make an extra buck. It was because it was the right thing. And so it worked out for her. So, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, if that worked out for her, mm-hmm. it'll probably work out for me. Mm-hmm. So far, it has. And then my dad was the same thing. He always helping somebody who couldn't help themselves and it wasn't for that extra buck mm-hmm. or the position or anything like that. It was because he genuinely got joy from helping people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just to have those examples, very, very powerful, very strong. So.
So you knew you were going to go into this kind of work all along?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Even from high school, you know, I knew that whatever job I wanted, I didn't want it to be, you know, I wanted to be helping somebody mm-hmm. and whatever that looked like. Obviously, it can look, even in a for-profit business, it can look like you can help people in a lot of different mm-hmm. ways. So it was just more about finding out, like, what would be the best fit for me. And so obviously, there's a lot of trial and error through that, especially after college, you know, figuring out what works, what doesn't work, you know, getting adjusted to the real world and what that looks like. And so, yeah, it was a lot of trial and error and just figuring things out.
Mm.
Where did you come to us from?
I came from Better Tomorrows. It's actually here in Tampa. They are in neighborhoods and they help with social services. And so I did a bunch of different things. I ran an after-school program. I ran a resume workshop, which kind of led me into this job.
Mm.
I did a senior hour. So yeah, I just kind of helped around. Like I tell people like what case management and social work looks like is being a son or daughter to people who don't have like support in their life. Mm. And you're just kind of doing things that you would do for your parents if they needed help for it, you know, whether mm-hmm. it be for signing up for something or, you know, figuring out where the nearest food pantry is, bringing food to them, like all these different things for people who don't have that person in your life. That's kind of what social work or case management should usually look like.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of my background.
When you think about the idea of looking after a neighbor who needs some support, you know, we'll use the case management in the example, but in our world, you're helping folks create a new career.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define success?
That's a good question. I think there's a couple ways you can do it. I think on the like technical aspect is they find employment. Mm-hmm. That's probably the easiest marker is to say, you know, somebody comes through the program, they find a job, you know, week 8 or 9 towards the end, and then they're week 11, which is the end of the program, but you know, day one for their new life mm-hmm. is that they're employed. That's kind of the easiest way to look at it. But you can, you know, take a step closer and see like their engagement throughout the course.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were taking what they learned and what they did and applying it throughout the 10 weeks. So, you know, we do, you know, workshops early on the course that are, the idea is like, we teach you something week 2 and hopefully you can apply it week 4.
Mm.
And so if you're able to see that, it's not as quantifiable, but you know, if you're working around the students, you can see like, oh, they are taking what we're teaching them and putting it into practice right now. I think that's a great indicator of if they'll be successful, even if they don't find a job week 10. You know, I have faith like, oh, this person is picking up stuff that we're teaching. They're applying it. They're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think isn't that the greater victory is a person finds something in themselves they didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, 100%. And it's a really cool thing to see. You kind of like a light goes off in their face. You know, sometimes there's this moment where it really clicks. Sometimes it's a little more drawn out where they have to go through that kind of trial and error to figure those things out. Both are great. You know, I think as a person, however you learn, as long as you get to the end, like I'll walk you through the process. I'll be there with you. So it's really cool to see.
Is there a common element to failure?
Is there a common element to failure?
That you see when folks aren't able to?
I wouldn't say so, no. I think every individual can be a different case, especially, you know, the big thing about people we help is like, do you have the support around you to be successful in the first place? Because you could be a person who is perfect for the program or perfect for any type of success, whether it be at a job or a workforce development program. But if you don't have like the support in place, things can fall apart and you don't really have control over that situation. And so it's you know, I don't think you can like kind of put that over any single person. It's kind of just the conditions that they're in and how ready they are to succeed. Because we have people who are ready to succeed but don't have that support. It's kind of tough to, you know, get them back on track. Mm-hmm. And then we have people who maybe don't know what success looks like for them, but they do have that support. We can kind of, you know, walk you along the steps of like show you what is success and what can be success for you depending on your situation.
Yeah, I think, you know, people get painted with the same brush.
Yeah.
Right, and we end up with narratives about those that do or don't succeed that fit a convenient definition we've kind of already figured out, which is you didn't try hard enough, you don't care enough, you're not responsible enough.
Yeah.
But I think once we dig a little deeper, as you said, the story becomes much more complex.
For sure. Yeah, 100%.
So when these folks are together, it's usually a small group. How many are in a class?
It's usually about 20 to 25 okay. all together, but they split up into their three different programs. So they're usually about 9 to 10.
Most often, do they create their own support group? Like I don't usually see the ins and outs. Sometimes I come in here and there, but you see graduation.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you see everybody really cheering for each other or teasing each other, or it's like they kind of, is that like a standard? Like they kind of, because it's a smaller group, right? They kind of bind together, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a camaraderie that kind of develops in the 10 weeks. It's a short window, but you know, you're around those people every day, constantly doing, you know, managing conflict, you know, doing something new with each other, figuring things out. And I think a very strong bond can form when you have a group of people who are all trying to figure out the same thing at the same time.
Right.
And so, yeah, you it kind of happens naturally. There's not really anything that we can do or have to do. You see those bonds form and those connections form, and you know, you obviously want to you know, coach them from the side and like kind of cheer them on as well, and make sure that they know that hey, this is what you're doing is great, and I'm glad that you guys are supporting each other. Mm. It only makes for a better experience for everybody when we're all on the same page and like helping somebody who's in the water onto the boat.
Yeah,
so it's really cool to see.
I love that. Do you have a student success story since you've been here this almost a year?
Yeah.
It's almost your year anniversary.
Was it two cohorts, three since you've been here?
Three.
Wow.
This is the fourth.
Is there a student that touched you specifically?
Oh, man, that's a great question. There's so many to pull from. I would say I'll go with Cantrell. He just graduated from the last cohort in truck driving, and he now works here at Feeding Tampa Bay as a driver. So it's really cool to see, you know, when students are given the opportunity to work at Feeding Tampa Bay, if an opportunity arises and it fits with their track, it's really cool to see them, you know, be able to get it. I like to believe that it's fully on their own merit. You know, I can only say so much about a student and their progress in the course. Their instruction is really up to them on if they were able to take what they learned and are able to apply it. So it's really great to see when a student is able to meet that standard. And he just was, he had a great story. I think he has a great testimony, and to be able to come from where he comes from and rise through it and then go through the program, be very successful, and kind of learn along the way. There was, you know, I meet with all the students throughout the 10 weeks a couple times and kind of touch base with them on their goals and their progress. And, you know, he told me stories about times where he had conflict and he grew from it, and he remembered stuff from Monday sessions and he was able to work through that situation. And it's just really cool to hear, you know, the stuff that we're teaching, you know, it's helping them throughout the 10 weeks. You know, I tell students, everything you learn Tuesday through Friday as far as your instruction, whether you're in the kitchen or in the warehouse or on the road, is going to help you on the job, but what we teach on Monday is going to help you get the job and keep the job. And so it's a, you know, it's really cool to see, you know, it get it into them and they can apply it in the real work situation.
So you've been with us for a little bit now. And as you said, it was not a pivot in your focus, but it was certainly an adjustment to your focus. As you now think about moving into the future, and I get you work with a team, but what in your mind starts to say, this is what future success as an organization looks like. This is how we can grow this. Have you started to have thoughts of that nature?
For sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, with what the workforce looks like, you know, in America and just in Florida in general, there's a lot of different opportunities to kind of expand what we can offer. You know, there's a lot of industries that we can be a part of that we can kind of grow into that are growing and that people are interested. I think that's the biggest thing is there's an interest factor of people who are like, I want to do this job. I just don't know how I would even start.
Right.
So I think tapping into that would be great. And then also being able to like fully get behind how we teach and instruct these courses. So it's got our full FTB stamp on it. Like, this is fully taught here. We fully do this. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we own and are proud to like serve as like a sort of like a product, mm-hmm. even though it's something that we're, mm-hmm. you know, teaching and instructing. So yeah, those are, I definitely see the scalability in how we can go above and further and providing, you know, more resources to our students.
Yeah. If you were to add something, what would be the first thing that you would add?
That's a great question.
In a dream world.
Yeah.
And you don't think that you have the CEO here. Just
Put the plug in his ear, right?
No, that's a good question. You know, some of the stuff we've talked about is like, how can we house it here in Tampa Bay? And you know, we've talked about like a barber school. We've talked about construction. We've talked about like cosmetology. I think those are all, you know, leading industries.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are wanting to be in those fields. Those are.
Well, they also all, I think what's neat about those is it gives somebody a sense of self-agency. Right there, you know, there's always value in going to work for a company, but there's also a lot of life that, you know, I don't know that we're using the phrase gig economy as much as we used to, but there's still a lot of sole proprietors out there, people that have a particular talent that they can use in different places and ways than they might have considered, as opposed to, you know, being in a corporation 9 to 5.
For sure. Yeah. 100%.
Well, friend, thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
For taking the time. We know you're incredibly busy.
Oh, yeah.
You have goals and things to reach and even more with the Fresh Force program. And we are so thrilled to have you as part of our team.
Thank you guys. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine a world with no hunger? We can. It's what we work toward every day. But we cannot do this alone. It's with the generosity of donors, partners, and volunteers that we are able to provide nutritious food to Florida's most vulnerable. And you can help. When you purchase the Imagine license plate featuring the iconic self-portrait of John Lennon, your dollars feed hungry Floridians. And every $25 donation goes directly to Feeding Florida. Visit feedingflorida.org and look for the Taking Action page to get your Imagine license plate today.
Time for another one.
Yes.
Super excited about this one. Mm-hmm. Not only the work that she does here, but the energy she brings.
Yeah.
Coolest chick ever.
Absolutely.
Welcome, Kim.
Thank you for having
me.
Of course. So we've been asking everybody, this is our icebreaker.
Yeah.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Good question.
Question of a lifetime.
Good question. Yeah, question of a lifetime.
Yeah, truly.
I'm going to say no, it's not. It's not a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So care to explain to yourself?
Okay.
What is the origin of your decision? What are the factors that went into it?
Mm. Well, you know, a sandwich, I would say, you know, has two slices of bread.
So does a hot dog.
But key thing is... Uh-huh. The hot dog bun is all connected.
So but you can tear them apart if you like.
You can, but it comes the way it comes. It's all connected. So
all right.
It's like,
so is a wrap a sandwich?
No, a wrap is not a sandwich.
A wrap is a wrap.
Yeah, a wrap is a wrap. A hot dog is a hot dog.
The plot thickens. I haven't heard the wrap.
Yeah, the wrap
before.
Is
yeah, that's
new. Yeah, that's new.
But
so,
it's
yes.
one piece of
carb.
Yeah. one piece of carb, so.
One big carb.
Right.
So
but
wrap
not as
is
big
not
as the
a
other.
Sandwich.
No, it's not a sandwich. Just like a hot dog is not a
sandwich. I'm not advocating one way or another. I just think you have the responsibility of the reasons for your decision.
Yeah.
This is true. Right. Hot dog is a hot dog.
Mm.
A sub is a sub, right?
A sub is not a sandwich?
No, it's
a sub is connected
sub.
Bread too, isn't it? It's like
the bread is connected.
This is getting
so. This
complex.
Is your sole criteria is whether the bread is connected.
Yeah.
Or what you order when you go into a line. Like if you think about it, like you brought it up. Like I would like a wrap, please. You're at Publix,
but it is a sandwich.
No,
the wrap.
So what category does wrap fall into in the broader
it's
scheme
own.
Of food
it's a,
item?
It's a burrito.
It's its own. It's a wrap.
Yeah, a burrito's a burrito. A taco's a taco.
Right.
It's not a sandwich.
It's one carb.
I mean, do you say I want a wrap sandwich, please?
Oh, sandwich really wrap.
Oh, this is new. This
right.
is a new approach.
This gets really more like, complex every time
right?
we ask someone. Like,
anywho.
Anywho, moving on.
Right.
So, Ms. Kim, tell us about, so you are and have been in the healthcare field.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
So I've kind of had a journey. I call it a
yeah.
journey. So I've been in the healthcare field, I always say over 20 years because as time grows, I'm like, well, I've been in this a bit, right? So I'm like closer to probably 25 years or so. I'll just say my origin started from wanting to be a pediatrician. And I always tell people that story and they're like, okay, I can kind of see that. Always wanted to be a pediatrician, started out on that journey. And one day learned about public health. And I was like, what in the world? What do you mean we can prevent stuff? What do you mean we can do things to keep us from saying being in the emergency department? And as I shared a lot with others throughout my journey, my family's way of life was really to use the emergency department as everything, your everything, right? Could have been that there was not a lot of, you know, affordable healthcare or just knowledge, right? And so that was the journey there. We like, hey, everything is emergency department. So learning about public health really helped me see there's layers to addressing your health, other ways of doing that.
Right.
And so I just kind of went in that direction, did my master's degree over at Florida International University, my undergrad at Florida A&M University. And just from there, it was, let me see how do I now conquer the world and teach everybody and do any and everything with my career to show people the importance of prevention. And it's just really been my passion, you know, and the work that I do.
So are we to connect the idea that you you think public health is important because of your own experience in not having preventative health? You've only had emergency health?
Absolutely. Just seeing the patterns of my family, seeing how you know, not really understanding that that wasn't the way it should have been. Really,
right.
It was just the way of life. It was our way of survival.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I kind of understood that there was another way, it was definitely like, let's do this differently. Mm-hmm. Let me understand how to help. Not only my family, honestly, my family's a big inspiration to this role that I, you know, my work, my space that I find myself in.
Yeah.
But like making those connections, yes, definitely, Thomas.
Yeah, it's funny how often when we talk to colleagues or any of our guests that are on the podcast, how often their origin story ends up being the defining factor of what they do with their lives. So you went on a pretty long journey through population health or as you know, public health.
Mm-hmm.
How would you define that? Like what do you, if somebody says, give us the simplest version of population health or public health, preventative health, how do you define that in your mind?
That's a really good question, a fantastic question. I think what comes to mind is simply put, How can you be the healthiest version of yourself? What can you do? What's in your control to be that version of yourself that you wake up every day, you feel good, you're eating better, your relationships are better, your mental health is intact? I'd say that.
What I find really interesting is you've been doing this for about 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So was there a person that influenced you, or was it your experience at school? You were just like, wait a minute. Or was there a professor? Was there somebody who made kind of the light bulb go off for you to where your life's work is changing generational thoughts, right? For your family and others. Was there a person?
Yes, absolutely. I'll say in my earlier years, it's my grandfather, right?
Okay.
I always say my grandfather was my first biology teacher. He actually wanted to go to school for biology, but could not afford to go to college. Okay. So I think he kind of poured into me like that love for biology. I'd be in the backyard. I was learning how to make red roses pink and like all the fun things, right? It's descaling fish after he caught the big one, right? So he really taught me a lot about the respect for life, right? And the origins of life, and how every piece is valuable and important to, you know, to us all and should be. He taught me to respect others, right? In a very unique way. I think I told the story. My grandfather was like, he worked at Lockheed Martin back in Orlando. I'm from Orlando. And that used to be a really big industry for people to have jobs. Yes. And he worked in, he would clean the offices. And I had no idea. I had no idea. He would always say, respect the person that cleans up your building just as much as you would the president of the United States. And so we just grew up with that, right? Not knowing that my grandfather was like the person cleaning up, you know, Lockheed Martin, but doing it with so much pride and joy. But all of that to say, he was my big influencer of like life and biology. And I think that's why I'm really interested in, you know, life and improving it and making sure that it is delicate.
Were you the first one in your family to go to college?
Yes, I am. My sister and I, we always joke around and say, you know, I went to college in Tallahassee. My sister followed. And then all of my cousins, my younger cousins, decided to go off in different places to college. And so we always say, man, you know, if you didn't go to Tallahassee, then I wouldn't have gone to Tallahassee, as my sister would say. But and then a lot of my younger cousins, they really look up to me. And, you know, for a little while, I didn't really understand, the, you know, the, how important that was.
What gave you the courage to take on that journey, that educational journey? What if it was unfamiliar in your family, how did you think, well, I can do this?
Yeah, that Thomas, that is a fantastic question, and I love going back down that journey. I now give my grandmother that kind of like that award. My grandparents really helped raise my sister and I. My parents, they got divorced when we were younger, and so my grandparents just jumped in and everything from taking us to school to after school lunches, you know, snacks and all the things. But I say my grandmother was that for me. She cleaned houses for in Winter Park. If I don't know if anyone's been to Winter Park, but
absolutely.
The houses are
all
gorgeous, huge, big downtown Park Avenue houses, right? So she cleaned houses for them, for this one family, and they were just pretty much apart. We heard their names our whole lives. We thought they were, we didn't know. We thought they were family too. But essentially, she would bring home to us the encyclopedias, the dictionaries, things that they would throw out. They were like, oh, we're getting new ones. We're going to throw these out. So she said, can I take that home? I'm going to get my grandchildren to read these things, right? And so she really taught us the importance of education. If we didn't know a word or a definition, go look it up. We hate that. Like, oh, but we go in the dictionary, like old school, because now there's the internet. But we look up the word and learn how to spell it and then recite it back to her and use it in a sentence. So she really instilled in us the importance of education.
Were you ever afraid of failing?
Good question, Thomas. I didn't know that I could fail because it was a secret.
That's great. I love that.
They kept that from us. We didn't know we could fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had some really powerful grandparents. So all you and your cousins went to college and are, that's just so amazing. The influence that love, and I forgot about you know, dictionaries and encyclopedias.
Encyclopedias, because the old ones
we had. You had a bookshelf in your house, right, that had all the educational stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Your parents would tell you, go look it up. And then we had the animal ones, too, right?
Mm-hmm. So
then
National Geographic.
Right, And then if we wanted to know something that was on TV, we'll go find out more. Go to the bookshelf.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that is, to me anyway, is that the advancement of technology has put so much more information at our fingertips. It's an incredible thing. The problem with all those books is they were static. The important part of it was is that they were more present in some ways, right? They were. Mm-hmm. I remember having to do term papers in high school, and you had to go to the library and get the. So Kim, at a certain point, you've spent, as you mentioned, 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. We're not going to focus on the plus.
Nope.
20 plus years in this population health world, but you've largely been on the provider side, right? Mm-hmm. Those that have allowed population health to happen or make population health happen. So hospital chains, others, organizations of care providers. But along comes Feeding Tampa Bay. What causes you to say, gee, I want to go from making sure that it can happen for others from the lens of a provider to I want to go make sure that it can happen from the lens of a nonprofit organization. How did that shift for you, and what was that journey like for you?
Thank you so much for that question, Thomas. I'll kind of blame it on Thomas a little bit. I'm going to blame it on you. I often say during my time at in the hospital sector, I met Thomas at one of the community health meetings where we were discussing food insecurity and just the ways that we could work together more collaboratively in the community to address those needs. And I don't know if I followed you, Thomas, or if you invited me to a cup of coffee. There was a nearby coffee shop, and we sat down and had a cup of coffee, not knowing that Thomas loves coffee just as much as I do. we had like such a wonderful debrief where we talked about that meeting and some of the things that came out of it. I was able to share with him some thoughts, some ideas, you know, that I had related to food insecurity, but then also the work that we were doing at the hospital. And so I always kind of make a joke and say that was like the start of the connection to understanding Feeding Tampa Bay, meeting Thomas, and my 6-year job interview. I say I got a chance to, of course, connect more with Feeding Tampa Bay and be a bit more strategic with getting the hospital engaged in the work here and just kind of seeing the passion and the work that and the connection that food insecurity is a healthcare, you know, concern, a healthcare problem, and that we've got to change the way we look at it. And so I blame it on Thomas, that cup of coffee.
It's your fault, again.
That cup of coffee.
I had to, I think, similarly with Shannon, I had to have a cup of coffee to convince her to go work with us as well. You're here with us a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
What are your observations of the difference between the world you're in today versus the world you came from?
Wow, Thomas.
Is there like a thing that stands out? Is there a particular... This isn't some lame talk show thing. Right?
We want to really get to know you. This, right?
Yes, really, really good questions there. I would say I didn't know that I didn't know exactly what a whole warehouse is when it comes to this the way this ship is run, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is a well-oiled machine, a lot bigger than I ever imagined. Seeing like my little piece there, I think, in the larger scope of things has been remarkable. I really think that people don't know, like, this is an amazing organization, and we don't just wake up each day and this be like poof, right? Mm-hmm. It is so many teams coming together, working together, waking up early, staying out late, you know, doing the things that need to happen to address all of what our community needs. So I think even what I see as Feeding Tampa Bay now has extremely expanded because I'm like, wow, I really didn't know much about Feeding Tampa Bay before I started. I mean, I knew a little bit, but now it's just like a completely huge, massive operation that is really focused on our community in ways that I think people need to hear even more of, right, of the work that we do.
So you say your little piece, but that's really not very, that's not true, you know, because for us, we approach food as medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Access to healthy foods for those that need diet controlled opportunities, working with our healthcare providers, everything from when you decided about public health, How do you feel about the advancements that are being made? And I know there's improvements, mm-hmm. but it's changed a lot. You know, working at Feeding Tampa Bay, having, you know, different hospitals that stand alongside us and really try to take care of those patients and provide mm-hmm. preventative measures. How do you feel about the way things are going?
Yeah, that's also a really thoughtful question. That makes me really connect some dots, right? Mm-hmm. I personally see that this being in this role allows me to be a bit more strategic with our partners, right? Mm-hmm. With our healthcare partners. I'm able to see things a little differently now that I'm kind of on this side of things. Yeah. And I think it allows for me to be that bridge mm-hmm. to say, hey, you know, yes, I thought we were doing amazing things with Feeding Tampa Bay, but guess what? Now I'm over here and we yeah. can do so much more.
Yeah.
And when we do that collectively, right? We have a lot more opportunity to mm-hmm. make that impact. Mm-hmm. I think this just allowing people to see Feeding Tampa Bay as a space of a convener, like we could be that spot and mm-hmm. we are that spot yeah. where if you come to us now, you have the access to so many parts of the community that you wouldn't have had before.
Right.
And so downstream, it helps really improve health outcomes, reduce healthcare costs. Right. But it also allows us to show the community that we're working together yeah. for their on their behalf, right? I think community is really simple. They get pulled and tugged, and this organization coming to them with this resource, that organization coming with a resource. They just want to see that everybody's working together for their good
yes.
and not necessarily just, you know, kind of poking the bear.
Right. Well, that person comes from an overwhelmed space already.
Mm-hmm.
So I think mm-hmm. what the beautiful part and the almost it's going to go on 2 years that we've been doing this, the kind of peace and understanding and gratitude you can see from those that come to us, mm-hmm. right, yeah. that care about their health yeah. and their family's health. That it's a beautiful thing. We're giving them a little bit, just one spot to go to instead of all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stability.
Yeah. Right.
There's stability in that.
You can count on us.
They trust us in that space.
They do.
And so I think it's a great place to be. And I foresee us really growing and expanding. And I always say putting on my cape, my superwoman
yeah.
cape. And just that's me. Hey, I
love
got
that.
My cape on. Watch
we've
out.
Done the we've
Watch
done out. The cape thing before.
Yeah, yeah,
remember?
That's right.
We
I
did an
those
event where we
that.
All had FTB
oh,
capes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I love
we'll have
it.
To do it
we
again
need to
sometime.
Bring that back, Thomas.
So, is there one idea or one plan that you have that would help elevate where we are today with our healthcare?
That's you guys are making some good questions today.
A lot of
here's some
thought
provoking
yeah.
questions. I love it. I would say I think we have an opportunity to make sure people really get it that Feeding Tampa Bay is more than just a food bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's a food bank plus, 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 plus.
Yeah.
And how do we stay innovative and creative with our way of communicating that, you know, even at the grassroots level, making sure people understand this is that place, right?
Yeah.
Not a place for just one thing, but multiple things, many things, and that you can trust us. We're going to be here. I often say when organizations come into communities and they have these fantastic ideas, this is how we're going to, you know, help you today. And then tomorrow, where are
yeah.
those organizations?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think we have a tremendous opportunity with the work that we forge forward in for healthcare, like the partnerships, the new you know, initiatives that we bring to yeah. the organization in that space, we have an opportunity to say that we're here for the long run.
Yeah.
We're here for the long haul, and we've got you.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And you have to keep checking in with us because mm-hmm. we just keep adding
yep.
more benefits and opportunity.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. We're a food bank plus, plus, plus,
plus, plus, plus, plus, plus. And it just
that.
Keeps,
to,
I love that. And it just keeps on going.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, thank you so much for taking
yeah.
time in your busy
you.
Day.
Thank you
know,
for
we're
having
just
me.
Blessed to have you on this team mm-hmm. and your leadership.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy
you.
To be here, too. This is, I told Thomas, I was like, pinch me. I think I'm dreaming.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You guys, what an amazing time we have had.
Mm.
This is our favorite.
Mm-hmm.
this is our team's favorite, and it's the public's favorite. Like, they really want to know what's going on under our roof.
They like us. They really like us.
They love us. I'm so excited. So we are wrapping up our Heroes of FTB with someone I almost have been with the whole time I've been here and watched her grow exponentially over that time. Like, it's been an incredible journey.
Would you agree with that characterization one, Kate?
I mean, hey, I'm not one to turn down a compliment, but yeah,
yes,
thank you.
Kate is with us. Kate, what do you do for FTB?
I am currently our Assistant Director of Community Engagement.
Where did you start?
I started as a VISTA, VISTA volunteer specialist, fellow VISTA, yes.
VISTA siblings.
and so I've always kind of been in the volunteer space, but definitely made some few steps, leaps, and strides.
Yeah. Learned a lot.
How did you come to us as a, like, first, what's the journey as a VISTA, and then how do you end up at Feeding Tampa Bay?
Yeah, so
we know how Ev got here. That was Vanessa.
Yes.
How did you get here?
Just walked in one day. In my last year of college, I did an internship with a program called City Year, which is part of AmeriCorps as well, where VISTAs can go and work in schools. It's a really wonderful program. So I learned about AmeriCorps through that. And then actually, before I came to Feeding Tampa Bay, I was this close to taking a VISTA ship in Reno, Nevada. And then I had some very lovely people in my life who said, hey, there's a pandemic and maybe it's not the best idea to like move across the United States and maybe you should keep it a little closer to home. Especially when being a VISTA, you don't really have entire security with that. So I knew Mike Suarez. Who we know and love.
Former city councilman Mike Suarez. I did not know this connection. Yeah, he was on our board for many years. Yep. I did not know this connection.
Yeah. Well, he was supposed to send you my resume. Clearly, that never happened.
I'm sorry, who are you?
He's a close family friend, and my mom knew that he was engaged here, and she knew I wanted to do some sort of VISTA or nonprofit work, and so she was like, you should check them out. And luckily, there was a VISTA position, and it was one that caught my eye. So, yeah, that's kind of how I got
And you've been here how long now?
A little over 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. A pandemic time, it'll be 6.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's right? True.
Yeah.
Okay, so I forgot to ask you the question that we've asked everybody.
The most important question of the day.
Seriously. What is a hot dog? A sandwich.
A dog's a dog.
Ooh.
I think.
High five on that girl.
This is the weaseliest answer of it. This is akin to saying I have no opinion on the matter.
That is not true.
That's totally what they're saying.
We have interviewed 10 people, and more than half of them.
You know what's surprising to me is how many of them are wrong.
Because you go to the counter and you say, "Can I have a hot dog?"
Yeah. Kate, it's meat and bread. How is that different than a turkey sandwich?
But I don't know. I did hear some of the other opinions. I will.
Yes.
Say. And so, like, I'm not, you know, I think a dog's a dog.
Yeah.
I think.
And
there
what
was
do
a
you?
Point
how
made,
do you dress your dog?
Ooh, I love a Chicago dog. That's my favorite.
That means everything but the kitchen sink on it.
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah. Those little peppers, so good. But if I'm at a ball game or something, it's mustard and onions only. So.
Spicy
mustard
or yellow?
Yellow.
Girl.
A nice sharp yellow mustard. Gotta have it.
That's so cool. Like that technicolor glow in the dark yellow almost.
Yeah. We'll have to tally the results up and share them with the team.
I think so.
Yeah. I think the winner is clear.
Clear. No sandwich.
What I'm surprised by is how many people are wrong.
And
how many people don't have an opinion that took the middle road.
We've started an internal war at FTB now.
Yes.
The staff is divided into factions.
We're not divided. But it's Thomas and one other
member.
It's Thomas and they were probably sucking up to begin with.
Right.
Anyway.
They were just nervous.
Love, you mean it.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Okay, so how you got here, why you're here, you've grown here. Mm-hmm. Who has been your, I'm going to ask two different questions.
Sure.
Who is your biggest influence as a person?
Oh, answer that one first?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought, I'm with you. I thought she was going to ask both of them.
I was thinking I was going to, but when you said that, I'm like, yes, I'll let you answer with the first one.
One day we'll get good at this.
Yeah, someday.
You guys are getting your footing now.
Yes.
Biggest influence as a person is definitely my mom. Not going to cry about it, but I could.
Why?
Because she's wonderful. She's the hardest worker I know, and she really modeled for me as a young kid what it means to get up every morning and go and do a job that you're proud of. And I think she's a wonderful lady. Hi, Mom. and just really taught me, you know, good from bad and what's right and wrong and how to treat people, most importantly, and really kind of instilled that in my brother and I when we were young.
How, so I was just going to ask you about siblings. I thought I remembered. Was your brother at the hockey game when you were recognized?
Yeah, he was
I
the
thought
one
I remembered
who's
that.
About yes. 8 feet tall.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the listener viewer, Kate was recognized as a community hero by the Lightning a few years back.
Which is now why we have hashtag be a Kate.
Yes.
Yeah. Very popular hashtag.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Catching on. Yeah.
Internally it is.
Yeah. So your mom influenced a lot of the way that you behave. Mm-hmm. Did she influence the way that you think? The way that you approach the world, like your world. For me, my mother was very, very, and I probably didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. My mother was very influential in my thinking. I think if my mother were alive today, she'd been gone a long time. But if she were to learn what I do today, she would go, that's kind of who I am and what I, right?
She'd be very, she's very proud of who she is.
There's a mixed record. But
you leaned into the proud part. Let's put it that
right,
way.
Got there.
But it's interesting that, you know, we end up taking a lot of our values from our parents, but we don't necessarily know it at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as I've gotten older, I've been able to recognize like, oh, wow, we are the same person, aren't we? We're both very similar in just our thought process it. So like we're both very type A, like organization, like, you know, no clutter.
Yeah. Made my children OCD as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you know, she's the person I go to if I'm having any sort of difficulty in life or in work, and especially in work, we're able to relate on so many things. And being a leader of a team now, she's for years taught leadership trainings, and so she'll pull out her binder and, you know, and go through the people.
I love
map
that mom has
right
a binder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is one of, does she have a binder about parenting?
Well, probably. Yeah, I don't know. That's what I assume when we're on the phone. She's on the other end flipping through the pages. But,
Mom, I need your help. Wait, yeah, chapter
right
12.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, she definitely has influenced the way that I think and operate and try to carry myself throughout work, especially, and life, you know.
So I kind of guess that was going to be your person. You want to know why?
Why?
So I come through the door to work, and she's quietly sitting and stands up and goes, what perfume are you wearing? And I tell her what perfume, and she goes, that's what my mom wears. You're reminding me of my mom. So it was the sweetest thing. So mom, even at work, if somebody smells like you, Kate's like giving you love. Aww. Okay, so that's personal.
Yeah.
So what about professionally? What about here at FTB?
Mm. I think what was the question of just who inspires
influence
me?
Influences me.
Honestly, I am so inspired and influenced to be the best version of myself at work through all of our volunteers that we see.
Yeah.
I think it's so incredible, people who dedicate so much time to service. When I was younger, you know, I did volunteering in school and with some of my sports groups and things like that. But the level to which some people give their time is so amazing, you know, and we say it every day in our volunteer orientations. We all have 24 hours in a day, and those of you who are willing to give back some of that time, what a gift, you know, what a gift for us and for the neighbors that we serve. So they keep me going.
Especially those consistent volunteers.
I know.
Yeah, like some of the ones we see every single.
Yeah.
Was your family a volunteer oriented family? Was that something that they did, or is this something that you've learned as you've come into our world?
I would say it's something I've learned more about as we've come into our world, not to be like, oh, my family's not volunteering. But, you know, for the most part, I've learned so much just as an adult and in my own life and experiences.
We certainly, Mom, we did not mean it at all as a, you know, families have different ways of connecting themselves to communities. Volunteering is just one way to do that. Producing good kids is another way to do that. As you've kind of navigated 5+ years here, which is a long time, especially in your generation, what is it that keeps you here? What is it that continues to say to you, I'm activated by, challenged by, I heard you loud and clear, which is what caused the question about volunteers kind of activating something in you that reminds you of what's important. But what activates you in your career here? What continues to challenge you to say, hey, this is work that I can identify with or want to participate in?
Yeah, I think I've been really lucky in my time here because I've had been either given or, you know, shoved at me different opportunities to grow and to learn. And more recently in my role now, kind of taking on more operational, you know, responsibilities. And There's always something to learn. I think when new people start, I will let them know, like, I'm 5 years in, I'm still learning new things every single day. And so I think that really drives me of wanting to know as much as possible. My brother would say that I'm gunning for your job. So,
look out,
you know, get ready for that. He'll call me up and be like, so you're the CEO yet? Like,
almost.
Not quite, buddy. But I think it's so important, and especially in my role where I'm going out and speaking on behalf of our organization to groups of kids or corporate groups, it's like, I want the full picture. I'm somebody who likes to know all the ins and outs before really, you know, speaking to something or getting into it. So,
what scares you most? What has scared you most? What scares you most about this? I think anybody that does this work, especially as you get additional responsibility, there's a, you know, as we say, nobody ever gets promoted into a job they're ready for.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. You're always moving into something. That's part of the reason why you're getting promoted is you're going to.
Well, you're trusted.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say for you, like thrown into something. Yeah. You were trusted that you could elevate to it.
What's been your biggest fear as you've gone through this? What do you harbor?
Man, I always want to do a good job. always want, and not for recognition's sake or anything like that, but just simply to have the best possible output of whatever our programs are. And so I think taking on new things, when I think about more recently, like operations, it's something that has been adjacent to my work for so long, but now stepping into it, it's a whole new world. Yeah. And it's an exciting one. Yeah. You know, I'm having fun with it. I'm learning so much. Mm-hmm. But that was really scary just because I didn't want to let my team members down or the teams that rely on the work that we do down. Just fear of not pulling through. But so far, I think we're doing okay.
Well, I think it's, you know, I know every leader struggles with imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. It is something that will plague you throughout your entire career. Like, why am I here? Why are they entrusting me, right? Yeah. Everybody carries that one. But I think the other that really challenges folks is leadership and taking over responsibility for a group of people. When you watch someone else do it, your head is always filled with, this is how I would do it if I were, right? You watch other people and you think, well, I don't know that I would do it that way. Yeah. And then they suddenly give you the responsibility, and you're like, oh, right? Uh-oh. As we like to say, the good news is you're in charge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bad news is you're in charge.
Yeah, that's very true. The more you know, I think you said something earlier where it's never like a misunderstanding. It's just not having all the information or it's not ill intent. It's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah, it's not malice. It's a misunderstanding.
Yeah. And so I think that plays a lot into it.
So let me, this will be my follow-up question to that, which is where I was leading you down the pathway towards, right? So you mentioned early on that your mother was a significant influence and she taught leadership and all of that. What kind of leader do you want to be?
I think there's a specific term for it, but like a servant leader, one who walks alongside their team, not in front of their team or, you know, pushing them from the back or whatever. I want to be someone who models good behavior and, you know, has a clear understanding of the work at hand. And so I can speak to, if you're at a roadblock, how can I help you? And I have the tools to help you. So again, I think it kind of goes to wanting to learn as much as I possibly can, because in the leadership that I've had here so far, I've managed roles that I've been in specifically, which is, wow, what a gift. Yeah. It's like, that's great. And now I'm sort of overseeing roles that I haven't been in. And so really trying to understand what roadblocks are there, I think takes walking in somebody's shoes fully. And so...
And I think there's always two key elements that every good leader has, and it sounds like it's it would be profound, but it's not. I think there are two key elements that every single leader has to possess in order to be a leader. First is they have to be able to be present. Mm-hmm. And present isn't just physical, but it's present in that moment, in that relationship, in that opportunity, like you're there. Your person is there. Your heart, mind, and soul are there. And the second is the willingness to continue to learn. Mm-hmm. Most leaders really start to fall apart when they start thinking they know everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think those are two gifts that your mother clearly gave you that will serve you well as a leader as you move forward.
So, Thomas, how long until you're out of here?
You know,
we
want to
give her some goals.
One of the good things is the number of people gunning for my job is significant. And I always find that affirming.
Right? Hold out for Kate.
Yeah. Right.
I think good money could be placed on a bet today as to where Kate ends up in an organization.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think when you're sitting in your shoe, you know, I remember getting my first few promotions and you have enough of a sense of, oh, hey, I, you know, But the idea that you would end up somewhere else in your career is crazy to me. Right?
Yeah. It is. Coming here as a Vista especially, correct. It's like you're not even technically a staff member of Feeding Tampa Bay at that point. You are somebody coming in for a year of service, and I really did everything I could to keep that foot in the door.
And you did very well and are doing very well.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think we wrapped with the perfect teammate, guys.
Isn't there one more question we want to ask all of our guests, Shannon?
Clearly, I'm forgetting it.
If you could...
Still.
It's the one making any changes or
Oh, sorry.
We're in training. We're working our way through some of the kinks.
But... Training for 5 years. We're getting there. I don't...
If you could make any changes that you think would benefit the organization, what would that be?
Don't say leadership.
Ooh, rats. Dang it. Check my notes now. If I can make any changes to make our work better, this isn't meant to be a cop-out. It might sound like a cop-out answer, but I think we need to continue listening to one another, not only our fellow colleagues, but the volunteers we work with, and most importantly, the neighbors that we're serving. Continuing to ask the question, are we doing this right? You know, because as a growing organization and one that wants to be one that looks at food insecurity as a holistic issue, we have to keep asking that question because the problem's going to keep evolving, and so we need to keep evolving.
Great answer.
That is a great answer, and it kind of is who we are all together. You know, we've been talking. We came out years ago with an idea and, you know, realized that wasn't the right path and asked the right questions to get us on the path we are on today, and we'll continue to do that because that's what's important.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kate.
Hashtag be a Kate.
Be
hashtag
a Kate.
Kate for CEO.
Oh, man. Up next.
We'll see you next time, friends.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Man, you guys. Oh, like, that's, it's so fun. This is the best episode. Having listened to the first one and all the feedback we got from the first episode already, people who were on it said they loved it. People who just listened to it said they loved it. And I feel like we learned so much about our coworkers and our friends during this, like, just from everyone. There was...
I love the timing of when we do this because I think everyone we interview is really interesting. But, you know, like, you're coming off the year. And for me, it's an incredible reminder of the amazing human beings that I work with, that I spend time with, learning a little bit more about them. But what I found interesting is pretty much their essence or their heart, if you will, match our mission. It's intentional to want to give back to the community, you know, put in the extra hours when we have to, all of those things. And it's just an honor to work alongside these people and more. Because we only highlighted 10.
Right. It's so hard.
And what do we
so
have? Almost
here.
200 that, you know, give you that feeling of wow.
Yeah, I think I was going to say virtually the exact same thing. It's fun. Throughout the year to interview other folks from the community and all walks of life that do other things. But it is nice to end the year kind of in the place where we all start, which is what happens in this building with the people that are here. Why did they end up here? How did they end up here? And and I think while there are many learnings, one of the things that always sticks with me is, and I say this frequently, as you guys know, in certain circumstances, you don't get many times in your life where you get to work alongside like-minded people who have the same values, who care about their community in the way that we do. And I just found myself time and time again saying, boy, this is, of all the things that we have in common, and there are many, fundamentally, we're all wired to say we want our lives to have meaning in the lives of others. And I just find that so affirming.
And pretty much everybody felt that. Like, it's, we always talk too about like how the odd paths that people take to get here. And this was like such a good example of that. People coming from all these different places, but having that common theme, like I want to help and I want to make an impact. And this is the place.
Years ago, one of the people that came in and helped us do some culture work, she called me after they finished the work and she said, you know, you guys don't have the one problem that everybody else has. If you do culture at any other company, the problem is everybody has very different views of what they're doing there, why they're there, what they care about. She said, what's unique about Feeding Tampa Bay is everybody there cares about the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whether you come from, you know, Marcellus in transportation or Kate in volunteers or Ashley in administration, all of them have that same value that says, this is what I care about. This is how I'm wired.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And a testament to that is the emotion that you'll hear in a number of those when they're talking about whether it be their influences or what's important to them or what got them here. So I'm really proud that we're able, as this show, able to give you a peek into what we get to live into every day.
Some of them were, you're almost like blown away to learn like the depth. Like I remember like when Thomas asked Ashley about the tattoos, like that was the depth that I didn't know was there behind that, like how much meaning. And you're around these people every day, but like
it's her journey.
Yeah, yeah, that you're just.
But
like,
her
wow.
emotion when you actually asked that of her felt very, very personal, and her response was so genuine that it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, you know, again, we've mentioned some of these themes as as I've been allowed to be on the podcast on this conditional basis for some time now. I don't know if I've gotten approval to stay,
but
we'll see what's happening in 2026.
If you guys haven't made a final decision on that. You know, what continues to amaze me and just inspire me is the thoughtfulness and the depth and the richness of the folks that come and work here. And we say this, but when we get compliments about Feeding Tampa Bay, when I get compliments externally, they come in a variety of different forms. But one of the one that I get most is they appreciate the sincerity of the folks that work here.
Definitely.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, this work, you can't be a poser.
Right.
No.
You've got to be committed. Right. You've got to be invested. You won't.
Mm-hmm. You don't last because it's a lot. It's heavy. It is.
And
we do
the
is
folks
heavy.
Here, the sincerity of who they want to be, who they are, when they're aware they're not, their commitment to it just, I just find, especially in some of our younger folks, I often am amazed thinking, wow, you are so far ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, you have such greater insight about who you are. But the sincerity of the folks, everybody we talk to cares deeply. We know all of them were nervous before they said
that. Yeah, they were. It's funny.
And there's different reasons for that. But one of them is because they care.
Yeah. I think they want that to come across well. And that's like what I hope people take away from this is like, you know, that authentic heart that like that you see here. And there was so much that on display with this.
Yeah. So you guys, it's the wrap for a year, going into our sixth year as the show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you guys have a wonderful holiday. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you listening. Please share. And we'll see you next year.
On to 2026.
Woohoo.
Can you believe that?
No.